I'm Bae, and you're listening to Bae Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This episode, I guess to close out Mental Health Awareness Month, I'm watched the first episode of HBO's The Baby, the new series The Baby, and I want to talk about it. But first, I know you may not have heard the name of this person, but you definitely have seen snippets of their art and work. Mark Rebillet, Mark Rebillet. I first found him on TikTok, but I actually think he's a DJ with a gimmick, a very particular gimmick. Okay, if you've been on social media at any point over the last month, if you've watched Hulu or any other streaming services that includes commercials, Hulu's the only one that comes to mind at the moment. But like Hulu, YouTube, of course. No, like the one-way platforms. I'm talking about the one-way platforms. So like I keep coming up with Hulu. So let's just stay there. If you've been watching your shows on Hulu over the last month, you have seen a commercial where he's talking over it. But more than that, I know for a fact, if you've been on social within the last, could I say 6 months? Probably longer, depending on what side of the social media you're on, like what side you find yourself on. Because like depending on the communities that you follow, you may not have seen this person's work. But Mark Rebillet is the guy, the DJ, who's in the bathrobe. And he has the glasses. He's got like shoulder length, sandy brown hair. And he's always in, he wears glasses and he's always in a bathrobe. And it appears to be some shorts or some boxers or what have you. And anyway, I think if that's still not ringing a bell, then consider this. There was one of his pieces of art, like was a song, and he's like, get the F up. What is it? It's like, it's morning song. He's known for morning songs, getting you up and moving and cussing at you to do it. Anyway, him, completely frenetic. If you ever watch any of his stuff, I didn't know he had a YouTube page, but duh, if he's a DJ, everybody has like 2 and 3 streams of income these days, so, or more streams of income. And so, of course, he has a YouTube page where it's monetized, but it's not just him playing his music and being kooky with his gimmick in a bathrobe, but like he has a show where he interviews people. And I don't know the quality of, like, I don't know the type of people he interviews, other kooky, different out there people. But what I do know is over the past, 2 weeks ago, he and the person that he co-hosts the show with, who I've seen before, but I'm not 100% familiar with, I think he might be a comedian. But anyway, I think he's from the UK, and I think he's from the UK. That's why I think I know him from like some comedy stuff in the UK, but I can't quite put my finger on it. Anyway, but Erykah Badu was one of his guests, was his guest 2 weeks ago for his show, Mark Rebillet. I'm sure I'm saying the last name wrong, but you know who I'm talking about now. If Google it, if you haven't seen Google it. I know you have seen him. Whether or not you've seen his YouTube show is a different story, but you've seen his TikToks. You've seen that commercial. You may have seen the commercial, but you have definitely seen and heard snippets of his music, seen and heard snippets of his videos that he's put out. Anyway, you just didn't know who it was, but that's who it is. Anyhow, so he interviewed Erykah Badu, and as a child born in the 80s, teenager in the 90s, late 90s, but nevertheless, and being a black woman in the United States, growing up in the United States, the hold that Erykah Badu, the chokehold that Erykah Badu and everyone in the neo-soul movement had on me was serious. For those of you who might not be aware, for the uninitiated, neo-soul was supposed to be this refreshing, and again, I am not a music scholar. This is my interpretation of what I lived through. Neo-soul movement was supposed to be a kind of a cleanse, a palate cleanse to what we came from before with the candy pop. It was neither poppy or candy like some of the other mainstream catchy R&B or soul, but it was also not, quote unquote destructive. It was it was for the Black community, the Black diaspora. It was supposed to be something like, not necessarily intentionally a salve, but an alternative. Actually, it's like alternative R&B, sort of, to what was out already. And somebody dubbed it Neo Soul, but the way it came across to me is you had a bunch of rappers who had a lot of skill who didn't want to talk about all the flashy things that they got or have acquired with their money or the people that they robbed, but they wanted to, or at least on the face of it, talk about, and I just kind of was shady just there, but the idea was that they would talk about their community and, you know, and really shine a light on the nuance and complexity of being Black and in the diaspora and really finding yourself. And on the soul singer front, it was really about being open and honest about your sexuality, about relationships, about your place in the world. And I'm getting all of this from... So to me, the most famous artist in the neo-soul movement didn't necessarily come out of the East, but they certainly, talking about the East Coast, of the United States, but they certainly paid their dues on the East Coast. Myriad reasons, I imagine that kind of feeling came from there, but Fuji's Neo Soul, or a part of that movement. Of course, Mos Def, Yasiin Bey now. He has been Yasiin Bey for a minute. Talib Kweli and all of his, well, both Yasiin Bey and Talib Kweli are both problematic, completely problematic, but they're in that too. Of course, Common problematic in that too. Erykah Badu problematic, but in that too. Jill Scott problematic, but in that too. India RE, the list keeps going. So they were an alternative to, you know, the pop girls who just wanted to, so for the women, wanted to show a lot of, like, be sexy, but like in this very commercial sexy way. The women and the men, or the people who were singers, were alternative sexy. Like, they were sexy in a different way, an unexpected way that was commercially appealing still, but not poppy. And the rap artists were sexy and kind of, you know, pushing the boundaries in their own way. And commercial, but like not talking about shoot 'em up, bang, bang, but talking about structural racism and police brutality and all of that stuff, right? That was kind of how it was packaged. And I ate that stuff all the way up. When I tell you, one of the songs that me and my mama bonded over was Call Tyrone, because it felt so genuine. Erykah Badu's Call Tyrone, because it felt so genuine, down to earth, and it felt like real life situations. I can remember, and I'm sure I've told this on the show before, but I can remember, I think my mama told me and my daddy confirmed, or my daddy told me and my mama and I were having a conversation when I was a teenager, like on one of our just road trips, because mama just liked to drive around. But at some point, I remember her sharing multiple stories, or learning of multiple stories on both my mama's side of the family and my daddy's side of the family, of men stepping out on their wives and having whole separate relationships. And when I say family, it could be blood relatives. It could be like like blood relatives, you know what I mean? That sort of family. Anyhow, and I can remember my mama is specifically telling me one time or recounting or confirming a story that I thought was kind of legend on my daddy's side of the family that now I know it's 100% true and happened on my mama's side of the family too, now that I think about it. Because I've talked about it before, but anyway, that one of the women in the family, mad at her husband for yet again stepping out, said, okay, I'm going to teach you a lesson. You want me home cooking and cleaning for you, right? Okay, well, eat this. You better not eat this dinner. So he eats the dinner. Of course, he gets sick. And so one of the ways that this woman, who probably did not have much agency of her own, but had a sisterhood of women to support her and her family and her extended family and friends, decided that the ways that she was going to teach her philandering husband was to poison his food. This is not unique to my family. This is certainly not unique to the United States. This is a tactic that women who felt kind of stuck, I'm sure, have used time in memoriam, especially when in the kind of Western, and I don't know if this is Western concept, but the concept of the wife stays home and cooks and cleans, but like she's also can be a punching bag, has been used as a punching bag, and also cheated on and mistreated and treated like, well, this your job is to just take everything I give you. Because that's our male-dominated society. It teaches men that they can, boys that they can grow up to be men that kind of phone everything in. But still walk around talking about that they are the man of the house and all of that. See, I'm about to get started. But you know what I'm talking about. So, you know, I'm not going to rehash it. If you're listening to this show, you smart, you get it. Because this is not a Western. Women, people who present as women, in time in memoriam have kind of occupied a space that they've been made to occupy. Now, what we know these days is that we're trying to occupy other spaces, but like, let's be for real. We already know what it is and has been for centuries, right? But we're changing things and have done for the last decade, two decades. So thank God for progress. But nevertheless, that was what was left to her. She didn't feel like in her small community that she could divorce him. She did not feel like she could physically retaliate against him because of whatever reason, whatever societal backlash that she might face, or the fact that that might cost her life. Let's be for real. Like, let's not be silly about this thing and paint the 60s, 70s, you know, the 60s and later, 1800s, what have you, like women who fought against their husband were not subject to the ultimate price. We know this, and it's not just in Western culture. We know that women have been subject, people who look like women have been subject to paying the ultimate price for the least infractions, for the smallest infractions, right? And let's not talk about Black and brown women of color and the prices that they've had to pay. Anyway, but that was what was afforded to her. And so in the conversation, this is why I'm bringing it up. Let me circle it back around. I'm bringing it up because in talking about that to mama, again, it had to be on one of those car rides where we were going, just tooling around. My mama, we're just tooling around for hours. And I'm sitting up here pondering all the things that I'm not going to put up with in a relationship, because, you know, when you're a preteen or a teenager, my mama was not having this conversation with me when I was a preteen. By the time you are a teenager, you know, teenagers are very intelligent. They're very intelligent. They just don't have the emotional intelligence to put everything together, right? They don't have the life experience to understand. And this is no disrespect if you're 18 and listening to this. I'm not saying this to be disrespectful. What I'm saying is you haven't lived long enough to know how this knowledge that you've acquired is not straightforward. It's not a straight line. And maybe, you know, the teenagers of today are a little bit smarter than maybe the teenagers of my day, but the truth is not always a straight line, even though it should be. What is fact, what is true, what is correct may not be the most attainable thing at the moment, even though it seems the most obvious. And so I can remember. And also, there is some respect that should be paid to the fact that right and correct, true and correct, and decent, be it 5 feet away from you, you have all the mobility to be able to get there psychologically, or there might be invisible barriers that stop you from going there, right? But nevertheless, so when my mama was recounting this story of one of the women in my daddy's family poisoning her husband when she was stepping out, and then I think the ironic thing is we were talking about that. What led us to talk about that story was unfortunately another story of infidelity that was close to our family. And again, I'm using family in air quotes because you know how we do. You got people who are like family, who at this point everybody assumes is family, even though there's no blood relation, no formal adoptions, what have you, no married, no legal binding whatsoever. You're just family. Anyway, so we're having this conversation, and I can remember thinking to myself, you know, these things are never going to happen to me. I'm never going to be that woman who is caught up like this. I'm simply going to leave. I'm simply going to just pick my thing up and go. Being the woman that I am today, I know that that's not easy. I know it's not I also looked at it when I was a teenager, i.e. child, as a sign of weakness. A weak woman, you're not strong if you can't pick up and go. That's how I was thinking, right? And so that's why I recognize that teenagers are super smart, because they're sponges and they're intelligent. But that emotional intelligence comes with age and experience. I don't even think I was more emotionally mature enough to understand that a woman, even if they're not physically abused, that psychological abuse is a thing, financial abuse is a thing. But that's a societal piece too, that I think a lot of folks didn't understand that financial abuse is a thing. But more than that, like the fear of the after is something there too. And so taking off the table bodily harm, taking off the table emotional and financial abuse, right? Taking that all off the table, it's scary to leave something that has been a part of you, a union that has been a part of you for a long period of time, for a chunk of your life, that you've built community around. Now you have kids involved. That's difficult. That would be difficult for everyone, for anyone. And then put on top of it all of the lies and manipulation that you're put through. People who identify as women be going through it and have been since the beginning of time. And so one of the reasons why I think I bonded with mommy through Erykah Badu, see how I'm getting back to it? Erykah Badu's Tyrone. I don't even know if I mentioned it, but she and I bonded over Erykah Badu's Tyrone because it was yet again another story of somebody that just needed to go, a man that needed to go, not because we part of the anything weird. It's just I was coming into my own and understanding that I had agency to do what I wanted to do. Now, I was naive about how easy it would be to do those things I wanted to do. But nevertheless, mama liked the song because it was just a bomb song. And she had probably been there and done that before. You know what I mean? Well, I actually know, based on her history, she had been there and done that. Another conversation. Actually, it's not even my story. One of these days, I'll have my mama tell her own story in her own time. But I don't know a single person that identifies as a woman that doesn't have a Call Tyrone story. Actually, you don't even have to identify as a woman. Just, I know everybody these days has a Call Tyrone story. You just have got to get all of your things and go. From me. Don't care where you do, but get from around me. Anyway, and so we bonded over that, but I think I bonded to that particular story or that particular song because it was like, yeah, I'm not gonna let none of that, like I'm not even gonna let it get to a Call Tyrone situation. Or even if it's that way, it's not gonna, like if it gets there, it's not gonna take very long. So anyway, I latched on to Erykah Badu because she embodied to me, the woman that I thought I wanted to be, open, aware, spiritual. Now, I didn't necessarily understand her spiritual lens, but I knew that I wanted to be open, aware woman who had her own agency and self-determination, right? Could do what she wanted to do with the freedom that God gave me, right? I think I latched on, and Jill Scott, I mean, she's a big girl and she could sing her tail off and I just loved her. But Erykah Badu, I really just latched on to because she felt free to me and I wanted to be that. And through the years, she has continued to be her free self and grew and changed and morphed. And I appreciate that in any artist. But looking back on that neo-soul period, what I didn't realize is that there was a lot of Hotepisms that I came to understand is not something that I appreciate. Google Hotep and to understand that more. And if you find that that's insulting, it's not my intention to insult you. When you talk about Afrocentrism and being pro-Black, pro-diaspora, it should be a celebration of all of us, not all of us performing Afrocentricity in a specific way. The neo-soul movement for my generation was a lot about the look. We were always keeping our head wrapped, wanting to wear the most hippy-dippy, Black hippy-dippy clothes that we could, flowy, multicolored, cross-colored, whatever. Lots of jewelry and stuff. And while clothes and aesthetics have their place, that does not make you... Like, what you wear is your thing. Like, right now, my hair is in locks. And from time to time, I wear jewelry to adorn those locks. For a long time, I've been natural for 14 years? No. I've been natural for a decade, for 20 years now, I think. No. 2008. No, 2007. 2017. 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. Okay, 15 years. I have been natural for 15 years. And of those 15 years, the last four, I've been locked. My hair has been locked. Do you know, I actually wanted to lock my hair early on in that time frame. Because my hair is tightly coiled. It's beautiful coils, but they're tight. And if I don't get a hold of keeping it moisturized and keeping it detangled, my hair breaks off at a certain point, unless it's straightened. And I no longer wanted to straighten my hair. I decided in 2007, that I was living in Syracuse, New York, and I put a box perm. It was a box perm on my head. And that was the last time I ever had a box. That was the last time I ever had a perm. Because it was for like a photo shoot or something. And I wanted my hair slick, just stick straight. And so I got one of those. And anyway, from that point forward, though, I just slowly but surely trimmed. And let's be for real, it broke off, too. But trimmed throughout the year, that by the time 2008 rolls around and I officially started into the new world. By the summer of 2008, I had cut all the perm out of my hair for the most part. And I just had a short bush and it was cute. But as I was trying to grow and change, probably about 2010, I wanted my hair to look a certain way. But again, y'all remember, you probably don't, but if you're a part of my generation, you were around, you understand, and you're a part of the diaspora, you know that there was a natural hair movement that made it seem like everybody's hair could be like a 3C. Even though all of our hair was not a 3C, and that you needed all this product to make your hair look a certain way. And so I fell into that spell of trying to make my hair look like something it wasn't. And so as a result, my hair really suffered from that. And it was in 2010 that I had the inkling to wear locks, but I didn't want to because I didn't want to appear to be a Hotep. And I don't know where I got that. I promise you, like, I didn't want to come across as fake. No joke, I'm serious. I put off getting locks for like 7 years, 6 or 7 years, because I didn't want anybody to think that I was a Hotep or being disingenuous and being a poser. But in reality, like, I love my hair locked now, and I regret that I let anything or even my notion of what real and fake is and Blackness to stop me from doing something to my hair that I should have been did. Cause I, like I said, it's when I tell you, I'm living with what is it? Not psoriasis. What's that scalp condition? It's gone from my head now, but it's a scalp condition where basically my, you know how your skin regenerates? Is it psoriasis? No. I forgot it. I don't know why it's not coming to me, but you know how your skin cells regenerate every so often? Well, because it's just a natural part of your body. Well, my scalp around the crown of my head and certainly at the nape of my neck and even around my ears, the skin grows too quickly. Like my scalp skin, the skin at my scalp regenerates too quickly. And then even if my hair is extremely clean, it comes across as if it's dirty because of all these flakes. You've seen the flaking videos on YouTube and whatnot where it feels satisfying. That's not satisfying to me. That is sometimes my skin has broken at my scalp because I've been scratching it because it's been so irritated. Here's the thing. My hair grows, my scalp, the skin in my scalp grows faster and it becomes worse and it begins to spread the more stressed I get. So you can imagine it is psoriasis. No, it's not psoriasis. It's dermatitis. No, I can't remember. It's gone. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about, but Google it. It's a scalp condition. It's a skin condition that mostly occurs in the scalp. They call it cradle cap. It's like cradle cap, only adults can have it too. And I certainly do have it. And these days, oils and certain over-the-counter medications help me keep it at bay. I have not had a massive flare-up in a while, but at my most stressed, I think it was 2015. And there's a reason why the winter of 2015 was extremely stressful for me. It was work-related. At a previous job that I had, and it was one of the most, I think I'd never been more stressed in my whole life, to the point where I broke out in hives all the way down to my toes. And anyway, my scalp, when I tell you that the cradle cap spread onto my face, like down on my forehead, there was nothing I could do about it. No amount of oil that I could put on it. It's like I would put oil on my skin and it would absorb so quickly that it looked dry again. Again, because it was skin irritation. And with my hair loose, I just couldn't see, I couldn't get a hold to my scalp. I couldn't get it together. And so when I decided to lock my hair, I'd been thinking about it for 2 years before I actually did it. But when I locked my hair in 2008 on the anniversary, my Sigmaversary, my 10-year Sigmaversary, 2008, I locked my hair. And I did it with the idea that, number one, I want to try this. It's literally just hair. It's either this or cut it bald. And then, I did this. I went to a loctician and I kept going back to that loctician for about 6 months for her to do the maintenance until I just stopped. Because she told me, she said, listen, you can keep coming back and giving me your money, but you can do this yourself. And you could only come back to me when you want like special things done, like for me to braid it up or for me to dye it. Because you've seen my work. You see how people be leaving out of my chair. And true, like people left stepping out of her chair, like looking good out of her chair. But she's like, you could literally do this yourself. You know, you don't have to come back here every couple of months just for me to maintain your hair. I will fix things. I can fix things and then I will make you look extra cute. But and good on her, because she could have just been continuing to take my money without that. I will go back to her when I decide that I want to do a color, but I definitely need to learn how to do an updo, because at this point my hair is down my back and I need to learn how to do better updos other than just the pineapple approach. But here's what I really wanted to talk about. I had avoided getting locks because I didn't want to seem like I was a hotep based off my hair. And we all know now that your hair, your style and your hair has nothing to do with who you are as a person. It should be an extension of you. Well, actually, it's not even an extension of you. It's just, it's an expression, but not a hollow expression. Like, your image is not who you are. What you do and how you move in the world is how you are. And I think in that neo-soul movement, as I got older and I turned around and looked back on it, it felt very superficial. Regardless, and it felt very superficial, at least how me and my crew got into. And then also, I did not subscribe to everything that they were talking about, most of the stuff that they were talking about. Jill Scott, I love Jill Scott, but I did not love a lot of her politics. Erykah Badu, I love Erykah Badu, but a lot of the way that she moves in the, well, some of the ways, some of the big ways that she moves in the world, that's not how I move. And so, but I still love her as a performer. And so, you know, 2008, I just let it go. And I'm like, girl, this is what I want to do. I want to try it and see how I feel. And I love it. And then when I don't want to do this anymore, I'll cut it off and be bald. That's the plan. I might change my mind and go back to being loose. I will tell you this, though. I will never chemically straighten my hair again, because that was part of the reason. I do believe my scalp was irritated all the time. And while I still have flare-ups with it locked, I can manage. I have not had that serious breakout since December of 2015. But I've had moments where, you know, again, stressful moments, where it would flare up and I'd have to lock my hair sooner than I wanted to. You know, do maintenance on my hair, wash it and do maintenance on my hair a little sooner than I wanted to get my scalp under control. But nevertheless, the best thing I could have ever done is stop processing my hair, stopped even putting all those products in my hair, and just let my scalp breathe and be with some simple oils and a little bit of over-the-counter medication, let's be for real. Anyway, but can you just imagine that a whole social movement, a whole musical movement stopped me from getting my hair locked, which ultimately helped me get relief for my scalp. And I don't know if that's quite a straight line, but that's kind of how I see it. And so anyway, I'm a decade removed from my version of when I came into, excuse me, actually more than a decade, like a decade and 2 years removed from when I came into, like the toward the end of my, like the height of my participation in the Neo Soul movement. Or at least, you know, subscribing, maybe not subscribing, but like definitely being immersed in it. And I'm looking back on it now and I see it for what it is, but I still do enjoy the musicianship of the people who were in that movement. Me and Talib Kweli, I cannot, he is trash. Well, that was rude. He's got some trashy ways. Yasiin Bey has some trashy ways. Some trashy ways. We shall never forget how Talib trolled a black woman for no reason on social media for the better part of 7 to 8 months. Cannot ignore that. And Yasiin Bey, he just seems like a cornball now. That's really it. He just seems like a cornball. But I do love his music still. Anyway, Jill is Jilly. She's still Jill. Dave Chappelle. Oh, I should have brought up Dave Chappelle because he was a part of that too. But like, he is not. That man has not been somebody that I admired in over 8 years at this point because of how he's been moving and shaking. My goodness. Boy, evolution is not. But he. Anyway, let me just keep moving. But if he's your. If you a big fan of his, do you, girl? It's just. I don't know that you and I have a ton in common if you overlook the fact of his trans comments and then his weak attempt to cover up those or at least explain those away. Like, I'm not buying it, but whatever. But Erykah Badu, as hotepy as she is, as kind of, it's hot. She's got some antiquated views, especially on the victimization of children. Like, I know she probably meant this to come out differently or maybe received differently, but it's hard for me to move beyond that comment that she made about women, the girls, not women, but girls in their miniskirts and their short skirts distracting or tempting these male teachers who are in the position of power. But then again, I think that betrays a lack of understanding of the power dynamics, despite her having access to the knowledge. I think it betrays that in her, that assumes that the men are powerless and the women have all the power, which, okay, but not in that circumstance. That's a child. That is literally a man in an authority setting. Now, I don't know if she's ever backtracked on her words. I don't ever know if she's spoken on it again, But like, that's not a thing that you just kind of unlearn. That's a thing that you keep quiet and you don't really tell too many people. That's how you think. So anyway, for a minute there, I stopped listening to her. I actually even did a podcast where I said I won't be listening to Erykah Badu anymore because I just can't get with that. Especially as a child who felt victimized, who felt like older men were just being gross. My body grew and changed faster than my peers. And old men would be talking about my booty. And I'm considering old to be anybody that wasn't a teenager at the time. Talking about my shape. Women talking about my shape. That is the grossest thing ever for an adult to be talking about a teenager or a child's shape. That's gross. It's nasty. It's disgusting. And yet my whole life, that's what I kind of heard. And so that just hit home for me, that statement that she made. And it's, and again, it feels less like one of those things that, oh, I just never understood this. And more like, yeah, this is what I'd be thinking all the time, but I'm not going to let you know that. But anyway, so despite that, I'm still moving around. Because at the end of the day, she is a wonderful performer. And maybe that's a toxic trait that I need to sit with. But I think, let's be for real, I think we all have faves who are problematic in one way or the next, and we overlook it. And maybe that's all of our, we all got an issue with that that we need to talk through. But nevertheless, getting back to this, what is it, Mark Rebillet interview with Erykah Badu. I do not think that she is a poser. I think she is her authentic self in all warts and all. And there was something about this interview that was chaotic, but also extremely pleasing to me to know that the Erykah Badu that I enjoyed as a teenager is still growing and twisting and changing, and what she wants to do is relevant. It's finding relevancy in new generations. Maintaining the she's maintaining her spot in, not even, what am I trying to say? She's relevant without trying to be relevant. She's continuing to be herself. She's still no, she is trying to stay relevant by staying active and creating content, creating art, selling things. Girl, y'all saw on she had that website where she was selling crystals that you can get from Dagon Michaels. You can get them at Michaels for like $10. She was selling them in the bottles for like $75, $80 or something like that. Now, come on, y'all. Now, again, I don't want to disrespect anyone who crystals are a part of their spiritual practice. But I'm just not buying Erykah Badu's crystals being more blessed in some way than if you were to get them blessed in a ceremony of your own religious making. Like, you give me a break. Anyway, it's because they were Erykah Badu. Actually, I saw them on Amazon. They were crystal water bottles. She was selling them for like $85 or something like that. She did like a concert. Oh, no. It was following her and Jill Scott's verses. And then, you know, you put it on the website. It was put on the website, her website, and they sold like hotcakes because duh. But she's just continued, I guess, she does, there's a lot of ridiculous things about her. There's a lot of ridiculousness about her, but at the end of the day, her musicianship is unmatched. Like, I would not tell you to take life advice from Erykah Badu. I would caution you against that. I would not tell you to take spiritual or relationship, I would not encourage you to take spiritual or relationship advice from Erykah Badu. What I would tell you is to experience her presence and then go away and take what makes sense to you and move on and continue to be who you are. Because I do think there's something to be benefited by being in the presence of most people, especially if they're not like awful people. Like we can take the best of everyone and help kind of continue to help guide us on our path. And so anyway, I said all of this and I went all the way around this mulberry bush to say that I'm still very much attached to Erykah Badu, and also watch that Mark Riblet, that chaotic hour and 2 minute interview with her. Reggie, dude's name is Reggie. Dude, Mark Riblet's co-host's name is Reggie. He's not from the UK. He's from the United States. I just don't know how I know Reggie. I don't know how I know him, but I definitely think he's like a comedian. Anyway, and maybe a musician too, but definitely a comedian. Anyway, but go watch that. I spent 40 minutes talking about Erykah Badu and whatever. This is, you know what you're getting into. Anyway, but yeah, so go watch that. It's chaotic, but it's also kind of cool at the same time. So just give yourself the space to go through that. Meanwhile, let me wrap this up so that I can jump over and talk about this first episode of the HBO series, The Baby. Y'all, this show is interesting to say the very least because, oh, I'll just have to get into it. This show is interesting to me. And lest you think it's not worth your time, let me just give you a couple of points. In the next segment, I'm going to give you a couple of reasons why I think it is worth your time. Whether you're childless, whether you're a woman, whether you're going through, you know, like wherever you are in your life, I think this is worth your while to watch because it asks some important, the very first episode asks some important questions and makes some very kind of forces you to have a conversation. This is a comedy horror, by the way, a horror comedy, whatever series. But nevertheless, unless I'm being too kooky, it's asking some very important questions and well, a very important question and making you at least a woman of a certain age. And when I'm saying a certain age, I'm talking about like your late 20s, early 30s, shoot, probably even your late 30s, some questions that every person that identifies as a woman or anybody who wants to become a parent or at least is in that phase where people are looking at you saying, oh, so when you adopting, you know what I mean? When you having kids, like everybody has probably been faced with this kind of conversation and your approach to it is anyway, I'll get into it cause I'm about to make a sharp turn. But anyway, in the next segment, it's all about HBO's new series, The Baby. First episode. I'm only going to be talking about the first episode. Okay. So stay tuned. Okay. So to the HBO comedy, The Baby, which, so you guys, some of you may know, but I've shared this before, but I'll say it again. Most of the time I'm recording this show in parts, days apart, in fact. So the intro to this thing was recorded a few days ago because I had the time to do it, but I didn't have the time to go into detail about the show itself. And so when I did the intro, I was only like a couple of days removed from having watched the first episode of the show. I'm now a few more days removed from watching the first episode and I have more fully formed thoughts about it, so I can't wait to get to it. But first, this show originally premiered, the first episode premiered on HBO on April 24th. And it actually don't know how many episodes this thing is gonna go through, but I know that there are five available at the moment. So yeah, I don't know how long this thing is gonna, I should probably look it up to determine how long. I can only imagine like it'll probably be like eight, I don't know. Anyway, but there are five episodes out at the moment by the time you listen into this thing. And anyway, so it's HBO Max. What do I want to tell you before I get into the it stars Michelle Desuarte as Natasha, the lead character. And for the purpose of the first episode, I'm only going to talk about her friends, who is Siobhan Marks plays Mags, her friend Mags, and Izzy Sudi plays Rita. So Mags and Rita are her best friends. And Mags and Rita are Natasha's best friends. And we're introduced to them very early, but I'll come back to that in a second. And right off the bat, I already love the representation because it's more, to my life, it's more representative. Natasha is a Black woman. I don't know if she identifies as biracial, but she presents as a light-skinned Black woman. Mags is a brown-skinned Black woman, and Rita presents as a white woman. I'm fine with that cast because I'm fine with that little network. But in reality, I'm actually still holding out hope that there's going to be more diversity in the cast, but I am initially okay. I'm initially okay with what I'm seeing. Again, I do want to continue to see diversity in the cast, but anyhow, all right, so let's get to the particulars. Okay. So I told you there are 5 episodes out. All right. So, well, let me do this. Let me tell you what the show is about, and then I'll tell you let me tell you the ratings. So it's 5.9 out of 10 on IMDb, which again, it's hard to understand who the critics, who's rating the show on IMDb. Is it other actors? Is it actors and directors? Is it film critics that are on there as well? It's hard to say. And I imagine if I did a little digging, I could figure it out, but I'm not gonna. So anyway, it's 5.9 out of 10 on IMDb, and 78% of Google users like this show, which I am one. I do like this show, even though there's a premise about the show that I don't like. I find it very annoying. And I don't know if it's because I'm not a parent, but I find it very, well, I'll get to it in a second. Anyway, so let me just give you the plot before I get to my thoughts. Okay, so Natasha, played by Michelle Desuartes, is furious that her closest friends are all having babies. But her life implodes when she unexpectedly ends up with a baby of her own. Controlling, manipulative, but incredibly cute, the baby twists Natasha's life into a surreal horror show. She soon discovers the true extent of the baby's deadly nature and makes increasingly desperate attempts to get rid of it. Making things creepier is Miss Eves, the 70-year-old enigma who has spent the last 50 years living out of her car and seems to be everywhere the baby is. Natasha doesn't want a baby, but the baby definitely wants her. Okay. So after reading this, I watched the episode cold. I didn't look into anything about it. I barely even watched a preview about it because y'all know I don't watch regular TV that much, which means I'm not looking at commercials all the time. I'm not looking at live TV commercials from HBO that advertise some of these shows. And so when I say I barely watched the trailer, I put it on and then I immediately went on my phone and started to look at something because something caught my eye. So I didn't even really look at the trailer. So I straight just watched the show. And in having watched the first episode and then reading this, it feels as if this synopsis has given away the whole show, but it actually hasn't. There's still a whole lot that's missed or that is not. There's a lot of detail that's missing from here that is okay. So this description is pretty accurate to what happens in the theme of what happens in the first episode. But let me just take a step back and let me just say from the start, the premise of this show supposes this weird thing that I also find that people, sometimes women or people who present as women or even people about their spouses, regardless of your gender, say about their spouses. But I tend to hear it from cis women about their husbands. And that is degrading things. Like, How can I? Let me just say it straight out. So basically the thing that you want, you talk about it as if it is a burden to you in a joking way, but it's still something that you want. You glad that you have. So I want to talk about relationships before I go to kids, because I think it's relevant, because most people can identify with that. Again, I'm not a parent, and I know many of the people that are listening to me aren't parents either, but I imagine you can appreciate this relationship analogy. I've heard cis women say on more than one occasion, and it's specifically what I would say is, and I don't know if this is a cultural thing, but I will say that I've heard some women joke about their husband being so dumb and just being so uncaring. And it's usually white women of a certain age who've joked this way in like a derogatory way about their husband, joking that they're so dumb and they're so uncaring that they have to buy their own birthday gifts, or when they go to the grocery store, they have to write out the entire list and add pictures because their husband would just never get what they want them to get. But like, they're saying it in a joking way, like, oh boy, men, can't live with them, can't live without them, sort of way. But it's really derogatory. Like, your husband, you knew who he was when you married him. Warts and all, you just didn't care, right? You made the decision that this is what we were gonna do. Like, your husband isn't any dumber than what he was before you married him. He's not any less caring, within reason, unless there's like literally something happened in your marriage. He's literally not less caring than the day you met him, or than before you married him, right? So like, what? I don't get that joke. It's not funny to me to be derogatory to somebody that you claim you love and want to be with for the rest of your life. If you don't like that person, leave them. Like, but don't stay with them and then be weird and toxic about it, because that's toxic. It's not funny to me. And every time I'm engaged in that, I find myself wrapped up in that. I try to wiggle out of it as best as possible because it's uncomfortable. Why am I why am I talking about my husband negatively to strangers, work people? It doesn't matter. Like, that just feels weird. Like, yes, does my husband sometimes go to the grocery store and not get everything on the list? Absolutely, guaranteed. And I know why that happens, because half the time he doesn't write the list down because he's too stubborn. But I don't think he's too dumb to get what I need. I think he's too stubborn and too proud to write things down. So I don't know what happened there, but anyway, you get the idea. That joke about relationships, how one partner will complain about another person, but boy, I love them. So that same concept, put that concept, but now think about children. The premise of this show is that babies come and upset your whole life. They take a lot from you. And in this context, this baby is literally taking from this baby that's coming to Natasha's life is literally taking from Natasha, but she's growing fond of it as it's taking. It's like the worst version of my kid is a parasite joke, which that joke isn't funny. Again, it's about as funny as, oh, my husband is so dumb, he never gets everything that I want from the girl. It's about as funny as that. It's not funny. But the show is entertaining. So again, the premise is corny, very corny. Because it's corny because many people, actually everybody, chooses to be a parent. Even if you're a teen parent and you keep your child, you're choosing to be a parent. Even if it's difficult for you to do, everybody's choosing to be a parent. Well, the mother is choosing to be the parent. There are many fathers out there that aren't choosing to be fathers and wanting credit for the bare minimum. But and anyway, I'm not going there. But anyway, it's just it's a silly concept for me, this terrible joke, because at the end of the day, this is what you want. And so what the show has done is taken that very corny concept and made it literal. So again, Natasha, single woman, as the premise suggested, or the overview suggested, single woman. We meet her in the first episode, and she's with her homegirl, Mags and Rita. And apparently it's like game night or whatever, or hangout night. And it seems pretty boring. Mags has her child with her, her newborn, maybe 6 months old. And she's tending back and forth to the child because she couldn't find a babysitter. We learned very quickly. Mags wasn't able to find a babysitter for her child, so she's distracted. Rita, who seems like, of the trio, seems like the mediator, is just pensively there, kind of, you know, expecting the night to continue, you know, willing the night to keep going through. And Rita looks increasingly annoyed. At one point, Rita remarks that, you know, we don't often get together because we're so busy. We're not often able to get together. And so let's be present when we're together. Now, she says this after Mags has gone to get her child, who clearly needs some attention. He's crying a little bit and needs some attention because maybe they need to be changed, or maybe they need to be fed, or some sort of attention. And so Mags is doing this thing while while Natasha is talking. Mags' attention completely goes to the child. And Natasha is offended. And then she makes the comment that, you know, we only come together for, you know, we hold out these nights, these specific nights, because we're all so busy. And when you're here, I really need us all to be present. And in this moment, Mags seems incredulous. Like, she's like, I have a baby. Can you not believe I have a baby? And let me just pause right here, because a couple of things are happening. So a newborn mother, a mother of a newborn or a toddler, thinks it not robbery to push through and come and hang out with her friends, even if it means I can't find a sitter, but by golly, I'm coming out to hang out. And that sacrifice needs to be acknowledged and honored. And we don't see that sacrifice being acknowledged and honored in that moment. Then we see a friend who desperately wants to continue hanging out with her other friends, but who also is acknowledging that, hey, one of my friends is not truly present here. Can you make sure that you're present in the way that makes sense? I really want you to, you know, let's engage. That's clear communication. That is 100% clear communication. Couldn't ask for better myself. Now, does there need to be some sympathy or some understanding from Natasha to Mags? Absolutely. Does Mags need to really evaluate what she can do and really, really be open and honest about where her mind is right now? Absolutely. I know mothers of newborns or toddlers, because you don't see them when they're newborns, really. Unless you're a close family or you see them in the picture. But like coming out, you don't see them these days. No. You don't see them hanging out with the fam. Listen, we recognize that there's some give and take here. I just think for these three adult women, especially Mags and Natasha, who are clearly in conflict in this opening scene, they're just being unrealistic and weird. Both of them are not giving as much as they could. Natasha did not have to come out, but not only did she come out, but she brought a baby. I've seen many a couples cancel plans because they couldn't find a babysitter and they didn't want to be bothered with having to apologize for their child being cranky or make sure that people were super quiet so that they wouldn't wake their child. Like, you know what I mean? That sort of thing happens, but Natasha made that sacrifice. But also, if you're going to make that sacrifice, then let's establish some ground rules and be open, and let's try to be present as much as possible. But yeah, let's try to be present as much as possible, and let's all just be cool. But it's clear that that probably could have happened had they been a little tighter. And it's clear that maybe Natasha and Mags aren't as close as they should be, which is, I think, part of the point of the show. And then you have Rita, who's just sitting there kind of being mediator, clearly appears more close to Mags for a reason we'll find out in a second, but still also definitely wanting the trio to hang out and work. And so there's this weird moment between Mags and Natasha. And then to break this weird moment, we have another weird moment from Rita, who announces, "I'm pregnant." And basically we get the sense she's super happy. She's been wanting to become pregnant. And then I think Natasha says it figures. Of course, it wouldn't be long after Mags gave birth that you would get birth. Or I think I might be blending some scenes. But anyway, Natasha is thrilled, but she's like a fake thrilled. You know what I mean? Like, oh, great. Without the brightness in her voice. And Rita reads right through that. And so she's offended Mags. And now Rita is offended. And so they both get up and leave and chastise Natasha on the way out of the door. Again, the three of them are not close to begin with right now. It seems like they were close at one point, but they're not really close right now. Clearly, they're not communicating effectively with one another. Because this scene did not have to be this weird. Yet it was. And what the show wants us to think is that Natasha is the one that's kind of making this thing weird. That we should be happy for Mags and Rita on this journey that they're walking through, but through Natasha's perspective, they're like some sorry suckers, basically. You sorry suckers. I can't believe you would just allow kids to ruin your life like that, and you're happy about it. At one point in that opening scene, Natasha literally asked the way that she engages with Mags is like, you just, again, back to that bad joke. But there is no joke when Natasha is sharing it. She's like, so you literally just you give this baby all your nutrients. You have little sleep. What do you have to show for it? And Max doesn't really have an answer. She's just like, this is what I enjoy being a mom, is kind of the sentiment that she expresses. And Natasha is disgusted. She's disgusted with that whole thing. And then again, so the whole scene ultimately ends with Rita and Mags leaving. With Mags' baby, they leave, and Rita gives Natasha a parting word, saying, reach back out when you got yourself together, because clearly you're not doing all right. And anyway, it's just this weird competition thing. Like, I just don't get how some people, priorities matter. You can prioritize. You make time for what you want to make time for. And when you make time for it, you do need to be present. And it just felt so weird to me and not very progressive in thought that they knew, essentially, Mags and Rita knew that Natasha would probably feel some type of way or not take the news well that Natasha or Rita was pregnant. Because clearly this was not a surprise to Mags. But like, they still went in anyway without, like, I just don't understand. There was no plan to communicate about it. There was nothing. There was no communication plan whatsoever. They were just kind of, they almost came in like frenemies, expecting her to explode so that they could have a reason to walk away from her. Which feels wild to me, because kid or not, relationship or not, like, you've met that one person who got in a relationship and you never saw them again. And relationships are what they are, whether they're eros or whether they're filio. The friend relationships, family relationships or erotic relationships, like love relationships. The reality of it is, these are all relationships that require time and energy. And so I know this is just a comedy series, but like that whole opening scene really frustrated me, because all of these people aren't really paying much attention to the relationships that they need to cultivate and are basically sabotaging their relationships. But anyway, I'll digress. So that scene ends with Natasha just wanting to needing a reset. And so she's going to go on a vacation to some, just on a vacation. We learn toward the middle, almost to the middle of the episode, exactly where she's going, but she ends up going on a vacation. But before she does, she stops off at her job. And at first you think, okay, she works at a restaurant. She's just like a cook at a restaurant. Then you learn very quickly that she's not a cook. She is the head chef. This is her restaurant. And there's some sort of anniversary or some sort of celebration that they're supposed to be having that night. But because Natasha has decided that she's going to spirit herself away on this vacation, this solo vacation, she's going to miss the celebration. And so it's clear that she gets joy out of her work and that the people that she works with like her and appreciate her and her vision. But like, she's just having a bad moment. She's having a down moment. Her friends aren't exactly appreciating her right now. And she's, I think as a result, she's not able to fully enjoy the success that she has. She won't be fully able to enjoy the success that she has with the restaurant. Like, you get that sense in this moment that she's just not able to enjoy life right now. So, you know, her coworkers, again, she stops at the restaurant on her way out of town, and her coworkers, I think it's sous chef. I don't know. What's the second in command? Well, I'm asking like you're about to answer me back right now. I think it's sous chef, head chef. I forgot the name of the second in command anyway, is holding down the fort. They always hold down the fort. But they're wishing her well. And she goes off on this journey, and it's clear that the journey is a long one. Like, you get the sense that she's been driving for hours. And in that time, she gets a call from her dad, who's reassuring her, and she's engaging with him. So you get the sense that she has a good relationship with her father. And you're learning more about her, that maybe she just needs to unwind. She's wound up a little tight, and maybe this solo trip would be good for her. Now, I'm thinking, dad girl, I think you need new friends. I think you need new friends, and I do think you need a moment to just really sit and relax and appreciate what you have in your life, and then reevaluate your priorities, because your friend having a child should not be an issue. It shouldn't be an issue. If that's your friend, it shouldn't be an issue. At the same time, your friend needs to make time for you, like for realsies, not just for play, but for realsies. And there needs to be some give and take in your relationships. And so in my mind, again, because I'm me, I'm thinking, oh, she's going to really use this time to kind of reevaluate her life and her priorities and what she wants out of her relationships. Because again, friendships are relationships. And you have needs in every relationship. So this is me, my kooky self, you know. I was going to say hippy dippy, but that's not hippy dippy. That's just science. Anyway, but my high emotion self is just like, maybe she's going to be working on her. Anyway, and so she goes, she finally gets to this place out of nowhere. Oh, shoot, I missed a very important scene. Oh, let me back up. The opening scene isn't Natasha, Mags, and Rita. The opening scene is a woman fleeing from the police, two police officers with a baby at a cliff. Long story short, these two police officers are trying to get her to stop fleeing with the child. And the woman looks haggard and frayed, but she's running, and she finally stops, but she's at this cliff, and she walks backward to the edge of the cliff with the baby right in front of her, not in her hand anymore, but right in front of her. And again, she looks like she's been through it. And ultimately she backs off of the ledge on purpose, despite the police officers begging her not to do that. And then immediately, like shortly after, the mother backs off of the cliff, the baby crawls to the edge of the cliff, and the police officers run to try to catch the baby. And you think the baby falls and the police officer dives and catches the sock, but actually just pulls up the baby's sock, the little booty, and the baby is not attached to the booty. So you get the sense that not only did the mother, who appeared to be the mother, fall from the cliff, but so did the baby. And so that's the opening scene. And then we immediately cut to Natasha, Max, and Rita and that weird scene. And so we're back with Natasha, who is still driving. She's driving on this windy road somewhere in Great Britain. I'm saying Great Britain because they have English accents, and I'm assuming they're in Great Britain somewhere. Anyway, or England. I still don't know the difference between Great Britain and England, and I probably should spend the time since some of the folks listening are from there, and I apologize. I will learn the difference because maybe it's just a semantics and Great Britain is England, but I don't want to assume. Anyway, so she's driving on the countryside. How about that? She's driving on the countryside, and it's a coastal countryside. And she finally gets to her destination, and it's this really rundown-looking cottage. Cottage is a generous. I'm being generous when I'm saying cottage. This thing looks like a hovel, like a shotgun shack. It looks like a shack. At the edge of it looks like a hovel too close to the water's edge at a cliff. Too many things. So number one, what happens when the tide rises? You about to get flooded. Also, you're entirely too close to the cliff. What happens if something falls off it? Like what happened in the beginning of the show, where what? Anyway, that view, there's a point in the episode where you get a view of the cliff, the magnitude of the cliff that this teeny tiny podunk rundown shack looking thing is sitting next to, and I got, my heart skipped because I'm like, this isn't okay. Also, it looked super remote. So what would happen? Should anything happen? Who gonna come get me? How I'm gonna get help? You know what I mean? Like also nighttime and the darkness of the water, I'm not okay with that. Like that's the stuff of horrors, which probably is the point of this horror comedy. Anyway, so she gets into this raggedy cabin looking thing. And anyway, it's got some amenities, so you know, but she's also absolutely by herself, which good on her, but like without any security, I'm thinking, girl, you finna get got. Anyway, because that's just the setup for getting got. Anyway, or becoming, you know, getting put on the side of a milk carton. Do they even do that anymore? Anyway, coming up missing. Anyhow, we see her. She's, I just lost one of my lock jewels. One of my lock jewels just came off my head or came off one of my locks. Anyway, you see how easily I can get distracted. Anyhow, blah, blah, blue. So she's sitting in this, this little place, and she's bored with the TV, so she turns it off, and she's just chilling and making her some tea or whatever. Just again, her whole purpose was just try to unplug and get away and be with herself and to reset. And so she turns off the TV and she's bored, so she walks outside just to get a little air and again, to be out in that creepy vastness of the ocean, being faced with this creepy vastness of the ocean and the aloneness of being on the beach at the cliff's edge, where at any moment something weird can happen, and surprise, a freaking prize, something weird does happen. So the opening scene, the woman who we learn very quickly that she, the woman that backed off the cliff, Natasha's arrival at the cabin preceded the woman coming off the cliff. So she was literally standing on her porch when the woman fell from the cliff. And she's shocked, right? Because, woo, this is what I wanted to see on my vacation. And so, of course, she goes near to the woman to see if she's hurt, which, again, we already know that she's hurt severely, like the ultimate hurt. Anyway, and so while she's yet looking at the lady, who's no longer just a shell, she looks up, and what should she see but the baby coming down? And so, surprise, the freaking prize, what happens? Of course, Natasha catches the baby. Tasha catches the baby. Oh, meanwhile, back at the ranch, I guess she was close enough to hear, to have, well, anyway, I won't get into graphic detail, but she caught the baby. So, right, thank God, right? So, the two police officers that were chasing the woman come around and, you know, get the story and all of that stuff. And Natasha's like, take this baby, please. And so she about to go back to her solitude if she can find tranquility in the solitude after what she witnessed. Then she hears, as the police are leaving with the baby, she hears a big ruckus. And then the police sirens come on. She goes outside and a huge boulder has crashed onto the police car and instantly taking the lives of the two police officers. But the baby is in the back of the squad car, totally fine. So Natasha grabs the baby and gets on the phone with, I think, one of her friends, with like Mags or Rita, to try to find the nearest police station. On her way to try to find the nearest police station, she, because apparently it's like hours away, because she's like deep off into the countryside, or at least an hour plus away. So she's deep off in the countryside. She stops at the gas station, and she goes to get gas. And she literally, at this time, because Natasha does not have like a baby seat or anything like that, she literally has the baby in a clothes basket that she got from the cottage that she's staying in. And anyway, so she's at this convenience store and she has to go to the bathroom, and she engages with the clerk, the store clerk, who it's like, oh, you're a new mom. And he looks at her as just somebody who's an exhausted new mom, not a woman who's gone through severe trauma just now in witnessing the untimely deaths of three people. But he sees her as just a mother who needs some sleep. So anyway, he says he would watch the baby while she goes to the restroom. And while she's in the restroom, she contemplates leaving because that's not her child, and she's, you know, the clerk will figure it out. And this is a brown man, so it's kind of stereotypical that he's a grocery store clerk or like a gas station clerk, but anyway. So this brown man is playing with his little white baby, and she peeks out the bathroom and she's like, I'm gonna just leave him with him. So she literally leaves out that little window, that little slither of a window that everybody leaves out of clearly in movies and stuff. So she leaves out of that and goes around and tries to get into her car and start it. But of course the car will not start. Surprise, surprise, it won't start. And it's like, of course. So she's contemplating going back in there when she looks and realizes she sees the clerk on a ladder trying to get something from a very high shelf. And then the man falls from that ladder and is dead. She runs in to check to see if he's okay, if he's dead, and she grabs the baby instead. The baby's just cuckooing and cooing and laughing and bubbling and giggling and stuff to her. And she grabs the baby in the basket, drives off. This is the fourth person that has died that she's seen. Tonight, she drives to the police station, finally makes it to the police station. The police need to check out her story, so they keep her overnight while the baby, they're examining the baby. And in the middle of the night, Natasha has this wild dream about the baby, and like a nightmare actually about the baby. And then she wakes, and the detective that she was talking to, or whoever the person who appears to be like a person in charge, is talking to says, oh, you're free to go. Your story does check out. All of what you said is true. Write them to the clerk. All of what you said is true. You can go home. So she goes home. She's trying to shake off what she thought was going to be a relaxing weekend, ending up coming home more stressed than when she left, but probably with a different sense of purpose, a better appreciation for her life, and wanting to just move on and in a desperate need to get therapy, but she's not gonna. Anyway, and bloop, blah, bloop. She gets a ring on her doorbell. And she runs to the door to open it, expecting to see someone her height or just a little bit shorter come to the door. She sees no one. She does that look around that everybody does when you know something's on your front porch. She does the look around, sees no one, looks down, and who should be there but the baby, that same little white baby in the same basket that she took from the cottage she was staying in. Same baby. On her front porch. The episode ends. And so we get the sense that there's going to be some wild adventure. We need to understand why the baby is it mysteriously came back to Natasha. And what this all means. And who's that creepy white woman that is following the baby in tow? We'll learn all about that as the episode goes on. Again, there are 5 episodes that are out right now. I don't know how many it's going to go to, but despite the weird premise of children being literal parasites in this and literal demons in this iteration of the story, or you know, in this interpretation of motherhood, yeah, I still think it's interesting for you to watch. It's weird, but it's still very interesting. Like, if you can get past that, which I know most people can because most people are not me being weird about that premise. If you can get past that, I imagine there's going to be some interesting things it's going to be an interesting ride. So I am going to continue watching this show. Now, listen, I will tell you in the next episode, if that second episode disappoints, I will definitely tell you next week's episode. And we will move on from this show. But I am actually excited to watch the second episode because I want to know how that baby got there. I want to know how that baby got there. And I want to know ultimately how Natasha changes. I want to know how the baby changes her. And I want to know how her relationships with Mags and Rita change and grow. I also want to understand what happens to the restaurant, her restaurant. What happens to all of that? Like, how does she shift her priorities to support this child who is clearly not leaving her life? So anyway, that's the show. Yeah, watch it or don't. But like, if you have watched it or you do have comments about that weird thing that is feels like a Western invention to complain about your children that you adore, that you would do anything for, that you went out of your way to have and support. But anyway, if you have a comment in the world, definitely leave it. You click the show notes to leave me a voice message and I will respond to it. You can rate the show favorably, share this with anybody that you want to, but definitely rating the show will help spread the reach of this thing, this hobby. Also generally, sharing it with anybody that you think might benefit from it or might enjoy it, rating it positively, 4 stars or more, and continuing to listen. That's the way that you can help me continue to do this thing that I enjoy doing. I will pause to say once again, the United States is still dealing with the question of gun control. And it's really not a question. It's really just, is there political will to do something about it, to put stricter controls in place? I acknowledge that while also simultaneously acknowledging that there are folks from the UK that just love making fun, UK and Australia, that just love making fun of the United States and the ridiculous political issues that we have, while completely not acknowledging that, oh baby, you can't talk much because y'all ain't sweet. Stuff ain't sweet over there either. That said, the United States totally deserves any mocking that it receives about our relationship to gun control. Because there is no gun control. Not for real. This is ridiculous and has been ridiculous for a while. I remember Columbine. And I remember thinking that's so outlandish, it'll never happen again. And yet, in 2 weeks, multiple people have lost their life that we know about to mass shootings. And these are the mass shootings that made the news. These are the ones that made the news. So who's to say that other things aren't happening related to gun usage, misuse, poor quality control checks? How many people are being victimized by their spouses or significant others who have protective orders against their spouses or significant others, who, even though there's a protective order against them, they're still able to get access to firearms? So anyway, I hate to bring it all the way down there, but like, it's part of my world. Yeah. So, you know, regular reminder, tell the people in your life that you love them and tell them often, because tomorrow's not promised. Take a breath. Do not watch. Filter out certain words if you need to on social media. Don't turn on the news. Limit your conversations with folks who want to just talk about this all day, but not in a constructive way, but just want to talk about it all day. You are allowed to disengage from conversations about this. I'll even put a little note in the show notes to make sure that folks understand the last 5 or so minutes of this show is probably not what you want to listen to if you don't want to hear anything about gun control. Yeah, like, you can disengage from conversations that make you uncomfortable at the moment, especially if it's messing with your wellness. That's not to say that you shy away from hard conversations that you need to have. What we are saying is that you need to protect your own wellness, and protecting your own wellness should not come at the cost of someone else, right? So if you are genuinely checking out of a conversation because it's triggering, you stand in that. And you need a break, stand in that. Take that break. You need that break. Take a moment for yourself. Disengage from conversations that are counterproductive. No is a complete sentence. Breathe. Don't forget to breathe. Put one foot in front of the other. Protect your own wellness. Protect your mental health. And that stuff will be there tomorrow. So it'll be okay. It'll be there tomorrow. You'll deal with it tomorrow. You do not have to deal with it right now. Okay. All right. Thank you so much for listening. Take care of yourself. And until next time, thanks for listening.